According to the last census, there were 11 million widows living in the U.S. That's compared to 3 million widowers, which is not surprising given that women tend to outlive men in this country. My guests today became part of that demographic, and they decided to take their collective experience and wisdom to write Wonder Widows, three grieving widows coming together to empower women to break the silence of widowhood. The authors are Peggy Langenwalter and Trish Comer. The third author, Jennifer Cox Horak, could not join us today, but Peggy and Trish, thank you for being on Women's Focus.
Oh, thank you for having us.
Thank you. We're happy to be here.
Could you start by telling us about each of your stories about becoming widows?
Hi, this is Peggy, and my husband and I had been married for 42 years, and he had just been to the doctor and had a clean bill of health. Everyone thought he was very strong and healthy, and I went on a business trip, and he passed away while I was gone. And we don't know for sure what happened, but he was in the wrong place when whatever happened happened. He was on a ladder. So he fell, and we didn't know whether he had had a heart attack and fell or whether he fell and had a heart attack. So I'm not certain, and I knew that I would just have to live with that uncertainty because I wanted to donate as many organs as I could.
How old were you?
I was 60.
And how long ago was that?
7 years.
Okay. And Trish, what about you?
Well, my husband and I were just married for 36 years when he got sick, stomach problems. And, of course, it was just one moment of going to doctor, to blood draw, to blood draw, to making appointments over at the Mayo Clinic in Scottsdale, Arizona, you know, just because they couldn't figure it out here in Albuquerque. But 2.5 months later, he was gone. It was just that quick. And we suspect it was pancreatic cancer. Mm. But, you know, there has never been a formal diagnosis of that. They just couldn't tell for sure.
And how old were you when that happened?
I was 58, mm-hmm. and he was just before his 61st birthday.
And how long ago was it?
That was, it's 5 years this past August.
I know Jennifer couldn't be with us today, but her husband died of pancreatic cancer.
Yes,
as well.
And we were friends. Bob, my late husband, Bob, and I were friends of Chuck, it's her late husband, and Jennifer. And she is, she's going on 9 years this mm-hmm. Christmas. I should say Chuck passed away mm-hmm. On Christmas Eve.
Oh, gosh.
And so we were with her at that time during his illness while he was in the hospital. And I think one of the biggest things I learned coming out of that was, yes, I was able to make stews and soups and all sorts of different things while he was in hospice at home in his last few days. That helped feed the family, and it helped feed, you know, the extended family that was there supporting her, you know, through these last few days. But as soon as he died, yes, there was that little bit of added extra, you know, that I did. I went out, you know, extended my, you know, my condolences and so forth. But it really wasn't until Bob passed away that I started to realize I was in error. And that was only because in our society we don't understand. Because I hadn't ever been in the situation of being a widow. I didn't know what Jennifer needed. I didn't really know what to say other than to bring a casserole, send flowers, give a card, whatever, you know. I realized after Bob had passed, the needs of a widow are so much greater than we realize as a society.
We thought that by talking about it with each other, we felt stronger. We felt better. We could get together. We understood each other. We could laugh together. We could cry together. We could confess our feelings of confusion and wondering whether we had lost our minds or not, just because the mind changes when we go through a trauma. And we realized it was good for us to get together. So we thought, well, if we put this in a book, then it'll be like inviting other people to sit at our table and talk with us, and it would help them feel better.
I appeared so strong mm-hmm. and independent. I didn't need anybody. I will get through this, and, you know, I mean,
I'll be strong for everyone else.
I'm strong for everyone else. I mean, you know, my daughter at that time had just experienced her first miscarriage on the day that Bob died. Her dad died. You know, so I couldn't be there for her, so I had to be strong, you know, and independent. And when people would ask me how I'm doing, oh, I'm doing fine, you know, because that was my aim. That was really my goal, was to be fine and to feel good again and to find joy in my life again. But inside, oh my gosh, it was just, I was turmoil after turmoil.
It's a challenge.
Yeah, it really was a challenge. And there were so many things that triggered that, too, that I never saw coming. So I had a lot to deal with, and we wanted to impart that information.
And a camaraderie. We wanted, as we've said, to invite people to come and sit at the table and have a conversation with us. We're not talking at people as a counselor or someone who's in authority saying this is how you should handle it. We're saying these are our experiences. Come sit with us, sister. We'll hold your hand and we'll be in this together.
But it also helps to say that the support pieces, such as your friends and family, can also learn, you know, that don't be shy. Go to their house. You know, and say, hey, let's have a cup of tea.
Or I'm coming to pick you up and we're going to lunch today.
That's right. Or, hey, I'm going to throw a load of laundry in and mop your kitchen floor.
Yeah.
I mean, I know these things sound so out of the ordinary for us Americans in our Western society. We're always waiting to be told, you know, what needs to be done. Because you'll always hear that. And I remember that, too. Is there anything I can do for you?
I'll do anything. Just let me know. But that puts the burden on the person who's grieving.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we thought by exposing that kind of thing, people who mean well can put their efforts in the right direction. Because people do mean well. And we realize that when people would make statements to us, we thought, okay, I'm going to accept their good heart. But that statement didn't do me any good.
Yeah. It's really hard because I think people are waiting. I'm just thinking of my friends who've lost people in the last year. And I'm sure I've made all the mistakes you talk about.
Oh, we all have.
We all have. Yeah. But that's so what it came to light.
Well, I'm here. Let me know what I can do. You know, so you're saying, like, no, just take the initiative. I think we're worried we're going to intrude on their grief and
well,
do something
that's true.
Wrong.
That is true. And so I think what might be helpful is for a person to call and say, hey, this coming Saturday, I have 4 hours free. I'm going to show up at your house to do anything you want me to do. Does Saturday work for you?
Okay. Or I'm going to go to the grocery store.
Yes.
Do you need something? Or
yes.
Okay.
I had a friend of mine, or actually two of my volunteers, because I, you know, had the North Campus Community Project nonprofit for years. And it was Bob passed away in August. So I had two of my best volunteers, you know, John and Betsy, knock on my door one day. And they said, hi, we're here to mow your yard. And it was like, oh, my God, I looked out in the yard. I was like, oh, yeah, it needs some mowing. I hadn't even thought about mowing the yard. I mean, it was just like, what, a week or two after Bob had passed, you know? So it was like,
yeah, who thinks about
who's going to look at your lawn, you know?
So if you had asked her, what can I do for you? She wouldn't have thought of the lawn.
I wouldn't have thought of
that.
But
when they showed up to do it, it was very helpful. Shall I read some things on this subject?
That would be great.
Okay. Days after the celebration service, most friends and family went back to their own pressing lives. Soon, I was by myself much of the time. Friends and family members in town resumed their busy schedules. They were also dealing with Dan's loss and what that meant in their lives. Truthfully, I wanted and needed more attention from friends and family than they were able to give. I believed people were doing the best they could with their own busy lives, which were full of other responsibilities. I suspect the general thinking was that I was strong, capable, and able to handle this huge change just fine. I was grateful for what attention and help I did receive. Eventually, some friends did come spend days or a week with me. Several came from out of state. It felt very good to have people in the house day and night. I liked waking up to a house with people in it. There was significant change in my attitude when friends came to visit and stayed for a week or more. Thank you, Linda, Elena, and John. My sister Rita had visited several times for 2 to 4 weeks at a time. It does my heart good. These close friends knew Dan, and they cared enough about him to come and be with me. I can't really explain the shift, but it was positive, and I felt it. Just the presence of a friend or family member was helpful because it made me feel like I was still significant, that I was worth visiting. I think that could be part of it. Part of the early days was recognizing I was still a person. The question, who am I now, comes up. I had been Peggy and Dan for over 42 years. It was part of a necessary reset. When friends who'd known us as a couple for a long time visited, We didn't have to speak a lot about Dan being gone and the huge void that left for us. They just knew, and I knew. And somehow, that was very comforting to me.
You touch on the fact that just helping you understand that you matter, which is really powerful, that
yes.
Widows sort of fade or right. are invisible.
And you know, Megan, today, 7 years out from Dan's death, that seems like a silly feeling. But at the time, it was real because we're broken open, we're raw, we're very vulnerable. Dan had been my buffer to the world, you know, my protector in a way. I knew everything would be fine as long as he was around because together we would get through anything. But there I was by myself facing everything. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting to realize that when people did come and pay attention to me, it was like, yeah, I'm still here.
That's very powerful. Yes. Did you want to read something, Trish?
I just thought I would go ahead and support what Peggy had just said from my just a little different viewpoint.
Okay.
But not much different. My take on this is what we covered in Chapter 4, and it was it's called The Support System, and it's entitled Did Friends and Family Come to Your Aid? I was very blessed with a great support system of friends. I really was. Each one gave me their ears and hearts, as well as thoughtful insight. It was important to get out of the house, especially in the beginning, and meet friends or family for a meal or coffee. I was also grateful for the takeout meals dropped off at my house, as this helped me adjust to being more comfortable in my home alone.
Yeah.
None of my friends avoided contact with me. They all knew me well as a person that would greatly benefit from processing my grief with well-trusted and an objective friends. I recall a terrible morning just as I was getting ready to shower when I threw a fit. And it's amazing when those triggers hit at its most weird, inopportune moments. You know, but something triggered. And just being alone in the house gave me permission to scream at the top of my lungs, cry out loud, and express my anger toward Bob for leaving this physical plane when he did. Within the following 15 minutes, I received either phone calls or text messages from three friends asking to meet me that day. Their timing couldn't have been more perfect. I couldn't have been more blessed. Truly, they were, I called them, my earth angels. Since all but one of our relatives live in the Midwest, I can't say with certainty what their attitude toward me was. I kept in contact with Bob's sister, Anne, more regularly in the beginning because she was there with us during the week of his passing. Since she was a closest sibling to Bob, I knew it would be important to reach out to her more often. On the other hand, my sister Allison was a big support in a way she will probably never know. She, too, was here doing her best to keep my life on track.
This is Women's Focus on KUNM. I'm Megan Kamrick, and I'm speaking with Peggy Langenwalter and Trish Comer. They're two of the three authors of the book Wonder Widows, three grieving widows coming together to empower women to break the silence of widowhood. You can find more about their book and their regular gatherings and events at KUNM.org and at their Facebook page. What I really liked about the book is that you are very open. Like, anything you're feeling is okay. It's okay
yes.
to be mad
yes.
at your partner for leaving. It's okay to be mad at maybe someone who said something wrong or figure out gently how to be, like,
It was okay to be sad. It was okay to be angry. It was okay to be happy. It's okay to have good moments and bad moments. Permission granted for every human emotion.
Peggy, at the celebration of life for Dan, you actually asked people to refrain from saying things like, Dan's in a better place, or it was his time to go. Was there anything people could have said that would have helped?
You know, just their warm embrace and their, I'm sorry, and I miss him too. I'll always remember him. He was a good man. He helped me. Positive statements like that mm-hmm. were fine. And they didn't have to say any words, really. Just mm-hmm. their presence spoke volumes.
What about the financial challenges that widows often face?
You know, those are very real. I ended up coming out all right. It took a long time to work through some issues, and I had to repeat my story. So it was painful to have to repeat my mm-hmm. story over and over and over and over. In those early days.
I think one of you had even suggested in the book you could have a friend sit with you and make these calls, and you did.
I did.
So, you know, if then you can chime in with information they need. But
yes,
that's a nice way to help take the burden off someone.
Exactly. Yeah. To have someone you trust, to know all your guts and your finances, sit with you. It helped me in the beginning to have another brain, another set of eyes, another set of ears there. Mm-hmm. And someone who was taking notes was, you know, just slightly detached enough to be able to write the coherent notes so we could review them afterwards.
Yeah, brain fog is a very big factor. I mean, I was just listening to Peggy right now talk about that. But that's really why.
Yeah,
we
you have
need
a whole
somebody.
Chapter on that.
Yes.
That's really
yes.
interesting.
Yes.
And quite a few women who have come to our gatherings have said to us, oh my gosh, when I read that part of your book, I realized I wasn't nuts.
I thought I was. But it was when the three of us actually sat down and started talking and sharing our ideas. Because, you know, how the book was written is that somebody would throw out a question. And then we would all respond to that question with our own thoughts, feelings, and, you know, and quite often they're varied. But when we got down to talking about it, Peggy is actually the one who brought it up, you know, and she said it's very similar to what they call the chemo brain.
And my sister had gone through.
Yes. And then I thought, wow, there is such a thing.
Okay, so you're not alone if you have brain fog. That's a good message to send to people. You're not losing your mind. How do you cope with that? Because it does eventually go away. But
it
you got to come up with some strategies.
It's temporary. I made a list in my phone, in my notes in my phone, that's titled, Where Is It? So when I would put something away, I would put detailed notes about where I put it away. So I
actually, Peggy, I need to use that right now.
It could be helpful for anyone, Megan. And I keep spiral notebooks. Mm-hmm. Even today now, when I have a serious conversation on the phone with some agency or another, I will write notes so that I can refer back to it. And that's been real helpful. Having another person in the room was another helpful tip.
Yeah. I didn't have anybody staying with me at all, you know, because I was alone actually from he died on a Thursday. It was by Saturday. My sister left at noon. You know, so I had to figure this all out, you know, and I didn't do a very good job. And when I hear how well Peggy did overall, you know, but it was like...
We're all doing the best we can.
Well, we all learn to cope with what we have. I mean, people with dyslexia learn ways to cope. People who have gone, you know, who've lost a leg learn to cope. We all have these coping mechanisms, which we call into play when needed.
They become survival skills is really what they are, you know, because each of us are going to adjust differently to widowhood. But again, it's that community that Peggy and I and Jennifer have created.
It's a camaraderie.
Yeah, that I've learned so much, you know, and so much about how people react to certain things or, you know, their personal experiences that neither Peggy, Jennifer, or I have had, but just different. So when somebody walked up to me and said, well, you're going to think I'm crazy when I tell you this, I was like, I probably heard it already.
No judgment. And that was one of the good things about our get-togethers and today, to this day, when we invite women to come sit with us. There is no judgment when they realize that it's a safe space. And that's what we create,
right,
is a safe space for people to be who they are and be in the situation they're in.
So are you having regular gatherings? What are you doing?
Yes, in fact. The next one is December 3rd. Coldwater Creek is kindly hosting a gathering for
us.
The retail store next to Apple at Uptown. Yeah. So that's a nice place for people to come and just, you know, be able to drop in and be casual and not be put on the spot at all.
Oh, okay.
And we are doing a book signing on the same day.
Right. So December 3rd at Coldwater Creek and then December 13th at Hotel Chaco.
We're having a luncheon.
Going Dutch.
Okay.
And we're inviting anyone who wants to come, whether it's a support person, a widow herself, a widower. You know, we just want to make a safe space for people to be able to come and be understood.
I will link to that at KUNM.org with this interview. So,
great.
And link to your website so
Thank
people
you.
Can get more details. But do you usually do something every month?
Yes.
Okay.
And we try to do happy things if we can. We know we're not forcing anyone to be happy before she's ready to feel joyful, but we're allowing space.
if she wants to come in and she's tired of being at home by herself, and gives her somewhere happy to go where mm-hmm. she's among people who will understand her.
We meet usually the third Friday of every month from 10 until noon or noon, 12:30, maybe even 1 sometimes, depending on the subject and how it goes that day. But again, you know, people can reach us, mm-hmm. You know, generally through Facebook is the best way.
Wonder Widows.
Wonder Widows.
The Wonder Widows on
right,
Facebook.
Right, right. Okay. And that's a good place that we do our announcing of our upcoming events. And plus, I think it's pretty inspirational, you know, in a general sense, you know, the Facebook pages.
Sure is.
Yeah.
And you also talk about anniversaries, which I think people might not understand. So it's a year out, perhaps. I'm like, oh, well, time heals all wounds. She must be feeling better. But the anniversary is probably like super
a trigger.
Right. A boomerang almost.
Anniversaries, holidays are always the hardest days, at least in the first year. I think it wasn't until last year that I felt comfortable being actually by myself on Thanksgiving. Peggy and I did get together and we went to a movie. But once the movie was over, I just went home, mm-hmm. you know. So it was.
And that was okay?
Yeah. For the first time. You know, I mean, it was tough. I mean, we do deal with the holidays in the book, you know, and how we dealt with them, I should mm-hmm. say. You know, what our feelings were. And we didn't always deal with them in the best way, you know, but they were painful.
It was our way.
They're painful. Anniversaries, holidays, you know, those are all milestones, you know, of doing something aside from being with your husband.
And so maybe also a good time for folks to think about, that's a good time to reach out.
Yes, it is.
You know what's interesting, Megan? I realized that I liked be invited, but I also like to be able to say thank you very much, no thank you.
Okay.
If I'm feeling like I need to have some alone, quiet time. It's funny, though, too, how we've talked about how through the years things do change. And when we look back on how we reacted in the first years, it's very different from how we're dealing with it now. So I wouldn't use the cliche, time heals all wounds, but mm-hmm. something does happen over time and we learn how to deal with it better, or we learn how to adjust to it. The edges aren't as raw. And we have learned different coping skills and different acceptance. You know, I realize after 7 years, there's no way Dan's coming back. Whereas in the first few days or weeks, it was like, well, heck, if it was that easy for him to go, why can't he just come back?
I'm Megan Kamrick, and this is Women's Focus on KUNM. I'm talking with Peggy Langenwalter and Trish Comer. They are two of the three authors of the book Wonder Widows. Three grieving widows come together to empower women to break the silence of widowhood. Find out more about the book and the group's gatherings at KUNM.org. Trish, you actually talk about, you felt like you had conversations with Bob.
Well, yes. I am clairaudient. Okay. That is a natural gift of mine anyway. And I actually debated whether or not I should even include any of that in the book, because a lot of people, or not about a lot of people, but I'm sure there's some out there that go, oh, no way, that's not possible.
Mm-hmm. And it sounded good to me because I am too. But I didn't mention it in the book.
Yeah. So I just decided to come clean. I mean, I was just like, it was starting with all new identity in a way. You know, so I thought, oh, heck yeah.
Be real.
I'm
gonna
go.
So you really felt like he was there talking with you?
Oh, he was.
Okay.
And then not so necessarily here. Like I didn't see him in the physical sense, mm-hmm. you know, but we had a lot of conversations, and especially in the beginning. So, yeah, it was quite a comfort. He helped me forgive. He helped me heal. I know the whole purpose of being here is to strive to be unconditionally loving. You know, to receive and to give unconditionally. You know, and I think that's what Bob and I had struggled with in some ways in our own marriage, because you get into this, you know, petty things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You get irritated with a little bit of this, or you get irritated that they snore. You get irritated that they don't put the toilet seat
the
down.
Humanness.
The humanness of us, right?
Yeah.
But really, when you look at it, the underlying, you know, feelings are, can you honestly answer? Do you love this person without conditions? No. Because those are conditions, no matter how petty and how little they are. And the irony behind the whole experience of him passing away when he did was I now had that unconditional love with him. That kind of pissed me off.
Yeah.
Because why now? Why now that you've died? I'm getting, you know, now I understand what it is. You know, I know I'm feeling it. You know,
I think that happens a lot of times.
God, yes.
When that physical body goes away, you realize all there was the essence, and that was all good.
The soul. I always loved his soul.
Well, you're very honest about I don't want to say the upside.
No, that's true.
Okay. But
there is a bright side.
We say that in the book.
There's a chapter on that.
Can you talk about that? I mean, you, in some ways, it's possible you let the small things go. You maybe become less judgmental just as you're talking to people. Talk a little bit about coming out the other side.
Yeah.
Positive thing.
Aside from being able to arrange the furniture or change the furniture the way you
go
want.
Go wherever you want to eat. Yeah.
Go wherever you want to eat. Go watch the TV when you want to and see what shows you want
buy
to watch.
Buy whatever food you want.
That's right. I mean, there are those types of things that you start to notice right off the bat.
Well, I think our personalities, too, have changed necessarily because we've had to learn new skills. You know, I did some work on my roof.
I just fixed my washing machine.
That's right.
The other day. Well, you're both ahead of me.
Yeah. Things that I wouldn't have done because Dan would have done it or I would have done it alongside him. I've had to learn how to handle a lot of things. And part of what I've had to learn is to reach out. And I reach out to my sons first and some close girlfriends. And then I do a lot of YouTube watching to figure out how to do things.
Yes, that's how I fixed my washing machine.
Isn't
the other
it amazing?
Day. And it was so simple.
I know, you can learn anything on YouTube.
I know, it is fascinating. As long as you can follow the directions and they don't go too fast, hey, they're good.
Play it over and over and over.
I'm a little slow sometimes when it comes to going, what did they say?
YouTube is a widow's friend.
I like that. I like that a lot. But, you know, there's something else that I learned, too, through the last 5 years. I learned a lot about myself, you know, because standing as a solo woman, as a single woman now, you know, I've had to come to realization about certain things and observe myself. You know, whereas before, I was observing Bob more. But once that was gone, 5 years later, I realized that when you're married or attached to with a certain person, you know, whether it's married or unmarried, you know, your partner in life, for so many years, that your life does become very intertwined. Mm-hmm. And really, if you think about it from a visual sense, they're like filaments of energy. And, you know, and those go from your heart to their heart, and they cross and over, and as they build in time, as it builds up, you create more filaments with each other. And one day, those filaments are cut, as in the passing of our spouses. But those filaments are still there, but they have nothing to connect to. And that's when I started to realize that I had to start connecting them to myself. I had to take those filaments that went out into Bob and turn them around and reattach them to me. Because now I'm the single solo woman. You know, that all of a sudden, I've got to take care of my own needs. Mm-hmm. I have to learn to love myself and to allow for my authentic innate nature to start emerging. That was huge for me when I started to put all that together. And that's because we do feel alone. We don't know who we are right after our spouses pass. And it's that rediscovery. And part of that rediscovery is taking those filaments and putting them back to us. Mm-hmm. And to loving and nourishing and nurturing our own selves. Because this is what we have to do now.
You know, it's up to us.
Yes. And it's up to us to heal ourselves. And not rely on our partners, you know, to do certain things anymore for us like we got used to having. And that's a part I think is very important for your listeners to really hear. You know, it's not the end of the road. It's the beginning of a new chapter. It's the beginning of a new journey within each of us as we make drastic changes and adjustments.
But then again, there's a different type of connection that we never lose because love never dies. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So these are two different things. One energy never quits, and we always are connected by that love. And then on the other hand, we do find that there's this energy that we do have to direct it ourselves to take care of ourselves and everything we're faced with now.
You know, love is infinite. And that is something I'd like to add on to what Peggy was saying. It really is. And I also know that, you know, that I'll always love Bob. That never goes away. That never changes. It just gets, because love is infinite, it gets put into a different place. Mm-hmm. But I am always open and receptive because of the unconditional love path, you know, in order to be open for another new relationship. And I'm, you know, open for that. That's all I'm saying. And you can cut that part out.
Nice ad, Trish.
It's not a plug for myself. But that's where I'm at right now. I'm just saying is that I've healed enough, mm-hmm. yeah. you know, in order to be able to accept another
a
love.
A different type of
a
love.
A different love. Type of love.
Yeah. And it will be different.
Yes, mm-hmm. it will be. But love is infinite. You can love once, you'll always love again. Yeah.
Well, Trish Comer and Peggy Langenwalter, thank you for talking with us.
Thank you
for
having
Megan.
Us. Yes, thank you so much.
That was Peggy Langenwalter and Trish Comer. They are two of the three authors of the book, Wonder Widows, Three Grieving Widows Coming Together to Empower Women to Break the Silence of Widowhood. You can find out more about the book and their regular events and gatherings at KUNM.org.